This is Audible.
Dreamscape presents The Healing Power of Essential Oils. Soothe inflammation, boost mood, prevent autoimmunity, and feel great in every way. By Eric Zielinski, D.C. Narrated by Kari Marshall. Preface. Then I heard the voice of the Lord saying, "Whom shall I send? And who will go for us?" Then I said, "Here am I. Send me." He said, "Go and tell this people." Isaiah 6, verses 8 and 9. I've always been that guy to step up and do what needed to be done. I can remember being a kid and helping my elderly neighbors by shoveling their snow. Not because my parents forced me, but because I wanted to. It made me feel good. And it still does. If I see a need, I try my best to fill it, especially when it involves people. When I became a Christian, this part of me got amplified. Early on, I stumbled upon Isaiah 6, verses 8 and 9, and I remember raising my hands in prayer, mimicking the prophet's words. "Here I am, Lord. Send me," I cried out. "I don't care what it is. I just want to do my part." That prayer has proven to be the impetus for my biblical health ministry, my career, and notably, my focus on educating people how to use essential oils therapeutically. I'm actually a late bloomer when it comes to using essential oils. In fact, my wife Sabrina, who has been using them since the early 1990s, tried to alert me to their power several times before I finally had my epiphany. I'll confess, as recently as a few years back, I marginalized essential oils as the smelly stuff that Mama Z used every morning. Thankfully, back in 2013, a client commissioned me to write a series of public health reports about essential oils. Supporting myself as a medical writer at the time, I was forced to take a second look. That's when I had my aha moment. I got lost in the literature. On studying countless peer-reviewed studies, I was floored when I read the clinical research that supported the efficacy of essential oils as a viable option to treat chronic conditions like cancer, hypertension, obesity, and type 2 diabetes, not to mention mental illnesses like addiction, anxiety, depression, and stress. Whoa. Suddenly, all of those too-good-to-be-true stories I had read online started to sound more plausible. Excited about my newfound research, I told Mama Z about the potential role that essential oils can play in healing the body and preventing disease. She looked at me with those all-too-familiar, I-told-you-so eyes, and I knew that I had some catching up to do. So, the journey began. Four invaluable lessons. As I pored over the research, it became glaringly clear that the articles I read in the blogosphere discussing essential oils and the information in the medical journals didn't jibe. Additionally, the blogs conflicted heavily with one another. Truthfully, it's a confusing mess out there, which explains the sheer number of people who regularly come to me unsure about how to use essential oils in the right way. Millions of people visit my website and social media pages every year to learn about essential oils. There are four reasons why I suspect this is so. First, a vast majority of bloggers are simply not trained as public health researchers, medical writers, or aromatherapists, and have no business teaching about the therapeutic nature of essential oils. Telling your personal healing story is one thing. Presenting yourself as a trained expert is quite another. Second, most of the information in the blogosphere is woefully biased. As a public health researcher, I've been trained to sniff out biases a mile away, especially when there's a potential financial incentive at play. It's challenging to find statistically sound articles about essential oils without seeing banner ads for the very product that is being written about all over the website. Third, there are huge chasms separating different factions of the essential oils industry, and things have a tendency to get ugly. These are the main players in the field. Aromatherapists, bloggers, chemists, governing agencies like the Food and Drug Administration, FDA, healthcare providers, MDs, DOs, etc., network marketers, researchers, suppliers, and manufacturers. Examples of these conflicts abound. Aromatherapists and multi-level marketing distributors are continually at odds with each other, disagreeing about the most fundamental principles of how to use essential oils therapeutically. Chemists are often in disagreement with clinical researchers because they view essential oils through differing lenses. And consumers are always concerned as to whether manufacturers are supplying high-quality pure oils. Moreover, governing agencies increasingly restrict the use of specific language across the field because essential oils are not approved drugs, and therefore, organizations and individuals that sell them for profit cannot make claims that they can heal the body, cure disease, or even have an effect on the structure slash function of the body. Finally, I observed that many doctors and pharmacists are leery of advising their patients about how to use essential oils, which makes patients nervous about potential contraindications and drug interactions. It would be untrue to say that medical doctors and pharmacists are not in favor of using alternative therapies. But because aromatherapy is not a topic that they learn about in school, they have no basis for discussing it with their patients unless they have studied the topic on their own. As I mentioned earlier, essential oils have yet to be approved by the FDA to prevent or treat disease, thus placing medical professionals in a sticky situation. They can neither confirm nor deny the therapeutic use of essential oils because it is out of their scope of practice. Discovering my calling. The more I learned about the friction within the essential oil industry, the more I yearned to bring together thought leaders representing each group to lay aside their differences. With my friend Jill Winger from theprairiehomestead.com at the helm as my co-host, the idea behind the Essential Oils Revolution online summit was born in June of 2014. We decided to host a free online conference, commonly referred to as a tele-summit, so we could provide interviews with these experts to a mass audience. Similar to live streaming YouTube videos, we created a website that acted like a conference meeting space. People from all over the globe could join for free, and from the comfort of their home, watch a series of interviews from experts representing nearly every sector of the essential oils community. Online health summits have been around for a while, but none about oils had really taken off because they tended to be a sales pitch to sell essential oils. To remedy this, we eliminated what public health researchers call financial or brand bias and ensured that every interview we conducted was non-branded, meaning that even the slightest mention of the interviewee's favorite essential oil brands was not permitted. We set out to do what people told me was impossible because of the overwhelming animosity within the essential oils industry. With the exception of my loving, supportive wife, nearly everyone I spoke to said that we wouldn't be able to convene aromatherapists, bloggers, chemists, researchers, and healthcare professionals under one roof to talk about essential oils. After nearly a year of rejected offers, criticism, and negativity from countless leaders within each camp, Jill and I proudly launched the Essential Oils Revolution on May 11th, 2015. We carefully selected panelists to offer insight on different subjects related to their particular expertise and covered a gamut of topics from safety guidelines to cooking with oils to a myriad of health conditions, including cancer, autoimmune conditions, chronic fatigue, and weight loss. More than 165,000 people from more than 20 countries participated in that first summit, which proved to be one of the largest online events of its kind. We received thousands of comments and emails from our online followers, and it became clear that most essential oil consumers were looking for an evidence-based, non-branded resource to teach them about essential oils for their health concerns. People were not only desperate for help, they were uncertain where to go because of the bias and conflicting information out there on the internet. The love and appreciation that came through those emails literally changed my life. And the experience of hosting the summit and helping folks improve their lives with essential oils actually shifted the entire focus of my career. Truth be told, I had never intended to leave my career as a public health clinical researcher and medical writer. I never set out to be the online essential oil guy. After seeing the obvious need, however, it seemed pretty clear that God was calling my wife and me to be that reliable resource that people were so desperately seeking to prevent and treat disease. The audiobook you are listening to is the result of this calling. This represents the best of the best for my telesummits and literally thousands of hours of personal research and study. This audiobook was crafted to be your go-to resource for all things related to using essential oils safely and effectively, and to empower you to approach the primary common health concerns affecting most people today. I invite you to join me as I continue my journey to master the art and science of essential oils. I hope you enjoy the personal anecdotes as well as validating scientific research, and find my DIY hacks and recipes useful in your own quest to experience radiant health. Introduction. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. John 10, verse 10. We know more about nutrition and health now than we ever have before. Yet nearly every single American is taking a supplement and or a pharmaceutical medicine. Why, if we are so advanced in our health knowledge, are we also unhealthier than ever? Put simply, it's because we've left nature out of the equation. God has provided us with what we need to be truly healthy. Need more vitamin D? Go out in the sun. Lacking vitamin C? Eat some limes. Need to improve your digestive health? Eat fermented foods. Have a cold, headache, or back pain? Use plant-based medicine, such as essential oils. There is a verse in Revelation 22, verse 2, that reads, "Then the angel showed me a river of the water of life, as clear as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb, down the middle of the great street of the city. On each side of the river stood the tree of life, bearing 12 crops of fruit, yielding its fruit every month, and the leaves of the tree are for the healing of the nations." I can think of no other substance on earth that epitomizes this Bible scripture more than essential oils. And I've come to see essential oils as a fundamental tool for achieving biblical health. They are the very essence of trees and plants, and they are vehicles of healing, and, in my opinion, they are also a cornerstone of a truly healthy life. A closer look at health. Health is a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being, and not merely the absence of disease or infirmity. World Health Organization. Do you consider yourself a healthy person? I'm not talking about the mere absence of disease, as the World Health Organization, WHO, puts it in its definition of health. I'm asking if you are really well, physically, mentally, and socially. Biblical health is not a list of thou shalt nots. It's an overarching concept that it is your God-given right to have and enjoy the abundant life that Christ refers to in John 10, verse 10. Having an abundant life means that you enjoy the fullest expression of health in all areas of your life: spiritual, physical, mental, emotional, financial, occupational, and social. Every area of your life is connected to all the others, like a chain. You are only as strong as your weakest link. If your physical body isn't performing how it should, it's going to weigh you down emotionally and cause strain in your relationships. If your job isn't going well, or you aren't working to your full potential, it's going to impact your financial health and your mental health by raising your stress levels. Again, let me ask you, do you consider yourself a healthy person? Consider writing your answer down in your journal if you are taking notes as you listen to this book. Periodically, go back to this question and answer honestly. I'd be curious to see how your response changes as your understanding of health and healing evolves because of what you learn in this audiobook. At its core, this health journey is about balance. The foods you eat, the drinks you consume, the supplements you take, the medicines you use, the thoughts you think, the emotions you carry around, the feelings you have about your job, your financial practices, the stressors you allow in your life. All of these contribute to or diminish your experience of an abundant life. You want to find a point of equilibrium in each of the seven areas so that you don't feel off-kilter. Interestingly, I've discovered that using essential oils can help you find this balance, and I will show you how throughout this audiobook. My Path to Wellness. As a kid, I never dreamed that I would one day be helping people restore their health. I didn't think much about health at all, honestly, apart from considering myself pretty healthy because I didn't suffer from any serious life-threatening conditions like cancer. As I look back on my life, however, I see a different picture because I certainly didn't enjoy the complete physical, mental, and social well-being that the WHO refers to. My health issues surfaced soon after birth. At just a few months old, I was so chunky, as my mom lovingly puts it, that my pediatrician advised that she feed me 2% milk because the formula I was exclusively drinking was making me fat. I haven't checked the Guinness Book of World Records to confirm, but I'm confident that I would have earned the dubious distinction of being one of the youngest people ever to be placed on a diet. This was the beginning of a childhood marred by misguided advice from medical professionals for seemingly normal health concerns. My mom tells me that I started to get sick when I went to preschool. Like many children today, I had frequent bouts of tonsillitis and numerous rounds of antibiotics, which led to a tonsillectomy and adenoidectomy when I was in elementary school. About that time, I also started to develop anxiety and to battle stress and a variety of fears. To address a chronic stammering condition that worsened as my social phobias progressed, I began a 7-year relationship with a speech therapist in first grade. By the time I reached middle school, I started to withdraw inwardly. My social awkwardness skyrocketed as cystic acne scarred my face. My dermatologist suggested a solution: take Accutane, a drug that was originally developed for chemotherapy, but later commonly prescribed for skin conditions. And that has been linked to birth defects, depression, and suicidal ideation. In high school, chronic pains in my joints started to develop, and recurring gastrointestinal issues like gas and indigestion made my life quite uncomfortable nearly every day. Insecurity and fear prevented me from chasing a childhood dream of moving out of state and going away to college. Taking the easy way out, I chose to attend a local university and studied English literature because it came easy to me. At one point during my college career, it dawned on me that I wasn't living my own life. I was letting other people's expectations of me and the status quo determine how I lived. This caused a deep sense of purposelessness that I'll never forget. It was like I was falling into a black hole, and every single day that went by, the light around me got dimmer and dimmer. Not long thereafter, depression settled in, and I fell into the habit of taking over-the-counter medications, alcohol, and street narcotics to numb the pain. As I stayed out until all hours of the night, partying and masking my inner torment with reckless living, my energy levels plummeted, and I got to the point where I needed a pot of coffee and a pack of cigarettes to get through the day. And I wasn't even out of college yet. By the time I was 22, I reached rock bottom and started to ponder taking my own life. It was then that I put my faith in a higher power, and my life was forever transformed. The day that I asked God to free me from all of my addictions seems like yesterday. After I had failed numerous times to quit smoking and drugs, God delivered me overnight. No withdrawals, no detoxing, nothing. It was like my body was given a second chance. Like I was literally born again. Depression and suicidal ideation disappeared. And I had a renewed vigor for life and a hope that I truly had a purpose to fulfill on this planet. To be clear, not every symptom immediately evaporated, as if God had said, poof, you're healed. The litany of health issues that I described, the gut issues, the aches and pains and the acne, still lingered. At first, I was confused. Come on, God, I negotiated. You healed me of the other stuff, why not these? You see, if I had been healed of everything all at once, I don't think that I'd have the appreciation for health and wellness that I do today. Hitting my rock bottom and then fighting my way back to health one issue at a time helped me develop patience, character, and perseverance. qualities I value in myself and try to instill in my children every day. Experiencing your own transformation. I learned that my health was my own responsibility, not that of my doctor, my spouse, or anyone else. I was empowered by the revelation that health is an act of self-love and not something that I should focus on merely to be free of sickness. I also realized that I couldn't take anyone's word at face value. Paul's admonishment to the Thessalonian church to test all things and to hold fast to that which is good became my guiding principle. Lastly, I came to see that we're all under construction and that I needed to give myself grace whenever I missed the mark. In his book, From Within I Rise, T.F. Hodge puts it this way. You cannot build a dream on a foundation of sand. To weather the test of storms, it must be cemented in the heart with uncompromising conviction. I urge you to find your own conviction, to become truly healthy, whatever that inspiration may be, and act on it. Even if you don't feel that conviction at this very moment, get started today on improving your health. As you learn how to do that in the following chapters, focus on the low-hanging fruit. Do those things that are easiest for you to implement right away to get some quick wins, which will increase your conviction. Take it line by line, here a little, there a little. If you use the fundamental principles of this audiobook to adopt an essential oils-based, holistic health lifestyle, you will never look back. Getting the most out of this audiobook. Are you overwhelmed by all of the information out there about essential oils? You're not alone. Many of the sources that you may be reading use fear tactics or overstate potential therapeutic efficacy to convince you to follow their advice or buy their products. This misguided and often conflicting information leaves a trail of bewildered consumers who are confused about how to use essential oils safely and effectively. It's with this in mind that I offer you four strategies to get the most out of this audiobook. 1. Don't overanalyze. 2. Quiet the noise. 3. Focus on the low-hanging fruit. 4. Remember biochemical individuality. 1. Don't overanalyze. Two phrases I learned during my short stint in the sales world were paralysis by analysis and ignorance on fire. We were taught not to overthink things, which is a surefire way to feel that you're not prepared to approach a customer and to make you freeze up before you ever get the chance to land the sale. In other words, paralysis by analysis. The most successful salespeople, on the other hand, tend to act before they think through all of the potential objections and have a much higher close rate, demonstrating ignorance on fire. I have observed that many online health consumers fall into the paralysis by analysis trap. They have a tendency to agonize about the details and quickly become overwhelmed and then are too afraid to move forward. To be fair, I can understand why. Health is a serious issue and people's lives are at stake. Not to mention that the information out there in the blogosphere is anything but consistent. What's the solution? Don't overanalyze. I don't mean that you should try essential oils willy-nilly. Commit to educating yourself, but learn at your own pace and implement the recommendations offered in this audiobook only as you're comfortable. This isn't a race. 2. Quiet the noise. When you first start using essential oils, it can be tempting to read everything you can get your hands on. From your new essential oils distributor to your favorite blogger, your medical doctor, and even your Facebook friend who fancies herself an essential oils expert. Maintaining a scientific focus is important, but feeling that you must read everything you can and interrogate everyone you know until you're completely overwhelmed can be counterproductive. A practical way to move forward is to limit your teachers to just 2 or 3 when you're first starting out. This is not to say that you shouldn't get a second opinion, but resist the urge to get a 4th, 5th, or 6th opinion, or else you're likely to hear such conflicting information that you won't know what to do. Do your research and vet your sources by making sure they have valid credentials. When I first started learning about essential oils, I didn't follow food bloggers. I sought out aromatherapists, chemists, and healthcare professionals with ample experience using essential oils in their research and practices. When you find a quality resource, let your guard down and receive what's being shared with you, just as a student does with her teacher. Then, when you have the basics down pat, you'll be better prepared to venture into the Wild West and comb through the vast array of internet resources. 3. Focus on low-hanging fruit. Implementing essential oils into your daily routine is more than a fad. It's a way of life. Even though the journey to health is a marathon, not a sprint, quick wins are a must because they create confidence, which is the foundation for long-term success. This is why focusing on the lowest hanging fruit makes the most sense. Set aside the advanced aromatherapy concepts and formulas until a later date when your knowledge and confidence are built up. Do something quick and easy first, like the Essential Oils Daily Practice in Chapter 5. It's all there, easily spelled out, ripe for the picking. Making your own hand sanitizer is another great place to start. Everyone seems to be using the commercially produced stuff, and yet it couldn't be more toxic. Want a quick win? Toss the hand sanitizer and make your own. You can get everything you need on Amazon. It costs only a few bucks, and it will take you just a few minutes to make a dozen batches. Check out my recipe in Chapter 9. 4. Remember biochemical individuality. By far the hardest concept for new essential oil users to grasp is biochemical individuality. In a nutshell, what works for me, a 37-year-old Caucasian male with Polish and Sicilian ancestry, will not necessarily work for a 75-year-old African-American female. Our physiologies are as unique as our fingerprints. There simply is no one-size-fits-all approach to healthcare. There are always multiple ways to achieve the effects you seek, just as there's more than one way to paint a wall. This trips people up because we've been indoctrinated by the medical community to believe that a standardized approach to healthcare is ideal. Are you sick? Take this pill that everyone else is taking. You all have the same sickness, so why shouldn't you all take the same remedy? This seems logical, but don't forget that it presupposes that all the variables are the same. You may all have the same sickness, but is everything else the same? What about your weight, race, gender, comorbidities, and contributing factors like stress, diet, and drugs you are currently taking? We all have different biochemical makeups, and you need to find what works for you. Lavender is the perfect example. Traditionally a sedative, this popular oil can have the opposite effect on certain people and act more like a stimulant. This is why I'll always suggest that you try multiple oils before giving up and running to the pharmacy. You never know what will work for you. You need to give your search time, and it takes practice. Resist any claim that says, there's an oil for that. This isn't true, because we're all different. A gift to help you on your journey. The therapeutic use of essential oils doesn't have to be complicated. Yes, you could dive into some advanced concepts like chemistry, blending, and interpreting scientific studies, but you don't have to worry about any of that with this audiobook. I have painstakingly taken out all of the guesswork and have tried my best to distill everything down to manageable, bite-sized pieces. Remember, learning a new skill takes time and practice, and digesting the material presented in this audiobook is no exception. Let me suggest that you make a hot cup of herbal tea, cozy up in your favorite chair, and begin the wonderful journey. Trust me, it'll be worth it. To help you along the journey, I have created a series of demo videos showing you how to prepare several of my essential oil blends. Each of the videos also contains extra insight into the strategies and information covered in this audiobook. You can access those videos for free at healingpowerofessentialoils.com. Part 1. Essential Oils Revolution. I alone cannot change the world, but I can cast a stone across the waters to create many ripples. Mother Teresa. Using natural therapies such as essential oils is about so much more than physical healing. It's about empowering yourself to transform yourself and your life. Throughout my life, being sick was a constant for me, and like many people today, I was a victim of misguided medical advice. I was woefully unprepared to manage my own health. In fact, I felt that my only problem was that I needed more antibiotics and other prescription drugs. I literally expected and often requested drugs every time I visited my primary care physician. Evidently, I'm not alone. A Medscape report shares a shocking story of one physician who blames patients for the misuse of medical treatments because of the sheer volume of people who flood urgent care centers seeking care for run-of-the-mill ailments such as simple ankle sprains, sore throats or diarrhea for one day, sunburns. The list goes on. None of us would even consider seeing a doctor for such common and trivial matters, the physician stated in an interview. I see about 50 patients a day, and easily 75% of them have no business seeing a physician, and 80% of those patients are expecting antibiotics. Can you relate? At its core, my work to spread research-backed information on essential oils is designed to educate families that they don't need to visit their healthcare provider for every little ailment. At the very least, you'll be armed with enough information to question your healthcare provider about alternatives before taking a prescription drug or having a procedure done. Hopefully, you'll have a natural solution or two in your tool belt so that you can handle some things all by yourself. Even better, thanks to the preventative effect of essential oils, perhaps you'll have fewer ailments that need remedies in the first place. This is one of the many reasons I'm so passionate about essential oils. They empower us to manage our own health. With essential oils, you can finally get a better night's sleep, reduce stress, boost your mood, clear brain fog, balance your hormones, and ease pain. And that's just the beginning. Are you ready to get started? 1. Fundamentals of aromatherapy. Your oils have a pleasing fragrance. Your name is like purified oil. Therefore the maidens love you. How beautiful is your love, my sister, my bride. How much better is your love than wine, and the fragrance of your oils than all kinds of spices. Song of Solomon, 1 verse 3, 4 verse 10. Imagine yourself walking through a beautiful garden. After brushing up against a rose, you faintly smell the floral scent. You bend over to get a better whiff and encounter an aroma that stops you in your tracks. This, my friend, is the essential oil. Or imagine making homemade lemonade as a refreshing treat after working in the garden on a hot summer day. When you finish cutting all of the lemons and juicing them, you are pleasantly surprised to find your kitchen permeated with an uplifting citrus aroma. This, too, is the essential oil. Essential oils represent nature in its most concentrated form. They are extracted directly from the bark, flowers, fruit, leaves, nut, resin, or roots of a plant or tree. And just one drop contains a complex network of molecules that deliver myriad effects to the body. They are entirely utterly natural. Used medicinally for thousands of years through a variety of non-concentrated forms, the true power of these oils is not in facilitating one-time therapeutic effects, as drugs do, but in addressing physiological disharmony and helping your body achieve the inner balance it needs to heal itself. And their power to facilitate healing is so effective that the scientific world has begun to take note. Thousands of peer-reviewed articles published in databases around the world discuss their efficacy. Laying the foundation. Before you dive into the therapeutic use of these precious plant-based compounds, you need to understand the basics. I welcome you along a journey that I hope will prove not only insightful, but also empowering. Think of growing your understanding of essential oils as a project, similar to building a house. If the foundation isn't set properly, the entire structure will soon crumble, particularly when a storm hits. And storms always seem to hit at the most inopportune moments, don't they? Using essential oils requires patience, study, and practice, and should never be seen as a quick fix for your health problems. You need to learn how to use them properly. If you're not armed with the foundational principles of essential oils, you won't know what to do or where to turn for answers if the results aren't what you expect. You might give up on using natural solutions far too soon, or fall back into the prescription medication trap, even though many drugs have long-term consequences, including, for some, a risk of addiction. When you take the information and instruction in this audiobook to heart, I trust this will never happen to you. Setting the record straight. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Matthew 2, verse 11. While it's not an exhaustive study of the subject, consider this section my very best attempt to distill 6,000 years of recorded use of essential oils down to a Reader's Digest version of aromatherapy history. Are you ready? Okay. Let's put first things first with a mythbuster that may shake up your essential oil theology. Jesus didn't use essential oils. It's actually one of the more pervasive delusions among lay people and students of biblical health. I can't tell you how many times I've heard people say, if it's good enough for baby Jesus, then it's good enough for me. Truth is, the Magi gave the Christ child gold, frankincense, and myrrh resins. How do I know this? Because essential oils as we know them didn't exist back then. The essential oils that we use today require highly advanced distillation techniques that weren't yet invented. Of course, crudely distilled alcoholic beverages have been around since our earliest recorded history. Museums have 3,000-year-old terracotta distillation apparatuses on display. But the likelihood that anyone could have extracted essential oils from plants is slim to none. What we do know is that virtually every culture dating back to the beginning of time used aromatic plant materials in their sacred rituals as incense, in their body care as ointment and perfumes, and in their medicine as poultices, salves, and tinctures. Could Mary have created a healing salve or ointment from the frankincense resin that the Magi gave her? Certainly. But she didn't use a drop of myrrh essential oil to cure Jesus of a sore throat. Big difference. The Cliff Notes version of the history of aromatherapy. Moreover, the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, take also for yourself the finest of spices, of flowing myrrh, 500 shekels, and of fragrant cinnamon, half as much, 250, and of fragrant calamus, 250, and of cassia, 500, according to the shekel of the sanctuary, and of olive oil, a hint. You shall make of these a holy anointing oil, a perfume mixture, the work of a perfumer. It shall be a holy anointing oil. Exodus 30, verses 11 through 25. Burning leaves, resins, and other aromatic plant materials for incense has been a religious tradition throughout recorded history. As far as we can tell, these practices ushered in the dawn of aromatherapy. The first records of essential oil as we know them today come from ancient Egypt, India, and much later Persia. Both Greece and Rome conducted extensive trade in aromatic oils and ointments with the Orient. It's safe to assume that these products, not unlike the holy anointing oil recipe that God gave Moses, were extracts prepared by soaking flowers, leaves, resins, and roots in various fatty vegetable oils like olive and sesame. It is presumed that fatty oils and alcohol were exclusively used to extract the essential oils from aromatic plants up until the golden age of Arab culture, 8th to 13th century AD, when a technique was developed using an alcohol solvent. History tells us that Arabs were the first to distill ethyl alcohol from fermented sugar, which could have been used to replace vegetable oils to create aromatic extracts, More on the difference between extracts and essential oils to come. The history books are in disagreement over the exact dates and to whom we should give credit for first inventing hydro steam distillation. But it seems fair to say that we can thank Arab alchemists from the 9th century AD. One of the first dated references to the quintessence of plants, i.e. essential oils, dates back to the Book of Perfume Chemistry and Distillation by Yaqub al-Kindi, 803 to 870. Many credit Ibn Sina, more commonly known as Avicenna, 980 to 1037, for discovering distillation, but that's still debated. In either case, he has gone down in history as being one of the first to document using essential oils in his practice, including an entire treatise on rose oil. Fast forward to early 20th century France, when the Renaissance of aromatherapy was birthed after chemist René Maurice Gaterfosse suffered a laboratory explosion and stumbled upon lavender essential oil as the remedy to heal the gas gangrene that ensued on his hand. Gaterfosse devoted the remainder of his life to researching the therapeutic nature of essential oils, and reported using many, such as chamomile, clove, lemon, and thyme, which were also used to disinfect surgical equipment and to treat infected wounds on his patients during both world wars. The science of aromatherapy was recorded in print with his seminal work, Aromatherapy, the Essential Oils, Vegetable Hormones. Commonly misunderstood today to refer solely to the inhalation of essential oils, i.e. diffusing, nebulizing, enjoying their aroma, the term aromatherapy is more properly defined as the therapeutic use of essential oils. Sciency information for essential oil geeks. Let's take a moment to walk through a couple of key terms, starting with the most fundamental of all, fixed oils and essential oils. You may wonder why the essential oils you've come in contact with don't seem all that, well, oily. That's because there are two different types of oils, which have different chemical and therefore therapeutic properties. Fixed oils, also known as expressed or fatty oils. Fixed oils are derived from both animals and plants. Common examples are cooking oils, including coconut, olive, and other vegetable oils that you see at the market. They contain fatty acids such as triglycerides, as well as certain phytochemicals, including vitamins, minerals, and a host of others. In contrast to volatile oils, aka essential oils, fixed oils do not evaporate. They will leave a stain on an absorbent surface, and thus cannot be distilled. Obtained by expression, the act of squeezing or using pressure, or extraction, drawing out using a solvent. Fixed oils vary in consistency, depending on the temperature, and can be solid, semi-solid, or liquid. Essential oils, also known as volatile oils because they evaporate readily. Essential oils are the lipophilic, fat-loving, hydrophobic, water-hating, volatile organic compounds that are found in aromatic plants, meaning they have the tendency to dissolve or combine with fats or lipids while repelling or not mixing with water. Somewhat of a misnomer, essential oils aren't oily like the fixed culinary oils just described, and they usually do not leave a residue when applied to your skin. They are generally insoluble in water, but soluble in alcohol and fixed oils, and can dissolve fatty materials such as grease. Unlike fixed oils, they do not contain any nutritional content like vitamins or minerals. Let's clear up another common misconception. Once referred to as essential because they were thought to represent the very essence of odor and flavor, essential oils are not essential for life at all. However, though they may not be necessary for life, I can think of no other substance on the planet that I would consider essential to have in my medicine cabinet. What gives these precious plant compounds their healing powers are the more than 300 different aromatic molecules found in each bottle, and chemists are continually identifying more. These compounds contain physiological and pharmacological properties that affect nearly every organ and virtually every function necessary to human life. The amount of oil in each plant varies considerably, It takes more than 300 pounds of rose petals, 30 pounds of lavender flowers, or 45 lemons just to fill one of those itty-bitty 15-milliliter bottles of essential oil that you have in your home. Just think about how many tons of plant matter it must take to supply the world's growing need for these precious plant-based compounds. The compounds contained in essential oils are affected by how the oil is extracted and what part of the plant is used. While you don't necessarily need this information to buy and start using essential oils, reading it can help expand your understanding of these potent healers. And since this is an audiobook that you can keep for years, as you're ready to deepen your learning about essential oils, you can always revisit this section. Thankfully, we are continually perfecting the manufacturing methods necessary to extract the volatile organic compounds from plants. Understanding essential oil manufacturing to help you purchase the right products. Have you noticed that your favorite bottle of vanilla is not labeled as an oil, but as an absolute? Yep. Same with jasmine and other plants that are too delicate to steam distill. Or have you seen the term CO2 on your bottle of turmeric or frankincense? These bottles look and even smell like essential oils, but they are different products because they were not steam distilled. And because they were extracted differently than essential oils, they contain unique chemical properties which lead to different therapeutic benefits and safety considerations. The obstacle that all essential oil users have to overcome is that some companies mislabel their bottles, and some sellers misrepresent their products. Even worse, I've encountered dozens of studies written by scientists who referred to the wrong products in their research. Bottom line, absolutes, CO2 extracts, and essential oils should not be used interchangeably. Most of the research we have is about essential oils, which is why I don't cover the medicinal uses of CO2 extracts in much detail in this audiobook, because they are still considered experimental. So to help you understand the differences among the various products on the market today, here's an overview of the primary extraction methods to be aware of before you start purchasing essential oils. CO2 extraction. Supercritical fluid extraction, SFE, uses supercritical carbon dioxide, SCO2, which is a fluid state where CO2 is held at or above its critical temperature and critical pressure. Not to get too deep into chemistry here, you're most likely familiar with CO2 being a gas at standard temperature and pressure, STP, or dry ice when frozen. In its supercritical fluid state, it has an uncanny ability to perform as a commercial and industrial solvent. Unlike other commonly used toxic solvents like hexane, CO2 is safe and environmentally friendly. The resulting extract is currently all the rage in the aromatherapy community. Distillation. Primarily produced with steam, essential oils can also be water and steam distilled, as well as steam vacuum distilled. Let me help you visualize the process. Steam from boiling water comes into contact with biomass, lavender flowers, sandalwood, cinnamon bark, etc., softens it, and breaks up the volatile organic compounds, VOCs. Now loose, the lipophilic, hydrophobic, nonpolar or non-soluble in water, VOCs, then pass through a condenser, wherein the steam separates them from the biomass that originally contained them. Also traveling with the steam are the lipophilic, hydrophilic, polar or soluble water components of the plant. In the condenser, the steam is cooled and the polar constituents separate from the nonpolar constituents while sitting in a tube. The water is then separated from the oil, and what's left are hydrosols, floral waters, and essential oils. If you're keen on trying to do this yourself, you can pick up a home distiller kit for a few $100. It takes a little getting used to, but you'll find that you can make some high-quality oils from many of the herbs, shrubs, and trees you have in your backyard. Enfleurage. One of the most expensive ways to extract volatile organic compounds, enfleurage is used for fragile flowers, such as jasmine. This is a labor-intensive process that is rarely used today. However, it is still interesting to note because of its historical significance. Enfleurage can take weeks to complete, and essentially uses animal fat, pounded and coated onto glass, to extract the essential oils from delicate flowers. The end result is an oil-fat mixture known as a pomade that needs to be washed with alcohol to remove the fat. After the fat is removed, an extract containing volatile and non-volatile principles is left, so it's referred to as an absolute. Expression. Primarily reserved for citrus peels, mechanical pressing, aka cold pressing, literally squeezes the volatile organic compounds out of the rind of a fruit. At one point in history, this was done by hand using a sponge to collect the oil, but those days are long gone. Citrus oils can also be steam distilled, but the aroma has a tendency to change considerably, and the therapeutic properties are much different. Solvent extraction. A type of liquid-to-liquid extraction. This is what our biblical ancestors utilized to extract minuscule amounts of frankincense essential oil out of the resin by placing it in olive oil for a short time. Today, it is used for delicate flowers, such as rose, jasmine, and mimosa. The process has been expedited, and much more of the volatile organic compounds can be extracted by using petroleum ether or chemical solvents like ethanol and hexane, all of which have safety concerns for us and for the environment. For this reason, safer alternatives like CO2 extraction are becoming more popular. Solvent extraction produces a waxy, fatty substance known as a concrete. When the concrete is washed with alcohol, the fat is separated, and the remaining end product, which contains volatile and non-volatile compounds, is referred to as an absolute. The various forms of extraction produce different types of products. The following is a list of the most common plant products that fall within the scope of medicinal use of aromatic plants. Taking note of these differences and being an avid label reader will not only empower you to become a more informed consumer, it will also help ensure that you're spending your money on the right products to meet your health goals. Absolutes. A byproduct of enfleurage and solvent extraction. Absolutes are highly concentrated aromatic plant compounds that are widely used in the cosmetic and perfume industries, as well as in the mental health field, because of their uplifting aroma. The aroma generally resembles the actual plant that it was extracted from. Examples include rose, jasmine, and vanilla. CO2 extracts. CO2 extracts are still very experimental, as few clinical trials have been conducted evaluating their safety and efficacy. That said, they are quite popular now in the aromatherapy community, because unlike with steam distillation, many more medicinal plant compounds are extracted during the process. No potentially harmful solvents are required. The oils are sometimes gentler to use on the skin, and their aromas are truer to the original plant than those of steam-distilled essential oils. Some of the more popular CO2 extracts are cannabis, turmeric, and vanilla. Cold-pressed citrus oils. Citrus oils that are expressed are much different from their steam-distilled counterparts. They are darker in color, they can stain clothing, and their aroma resembles the original peel much more closely. Technically speaking, citrus oils are not essential oils at all because they contain non-volatile principles. But the aromatherapy and chemistry communities have made an exception to the rule. For more information on the safety differences, phototoxicity, between expressed and distilled citrus oils, there will be a list of photosensitizing and non-photosensitizing essential oils in the next chapter. Steam-distilled essential oils. Steam distillation often changes the aromatic compounds in the plant. A classic example is the distillation of German chamomile, when the chemical matricin is changed by the high-temperature steam to chamazuline. Not a bad thing necessarily, as both have anti-inflammatory properties, but it's important to note that the chemical contents, and therefore the specific therapeutic effects of steam-distilled essential oils, are often different from those of the original plant. Look for labels that indicate whether the bottle contents have been steam distilled. Otherwise, you can never be sure how the product was extracted and whether or not it's truly an essential oil. Extracts. Similar to absolutes in that they contain volatile and non-volatile principles, Extracts are popular because they retain many of the same chemical properties of essential oils. Popular examples are cinnamon bark, clove, ginger, lemon, nutmeg, orange, peppermint, rose, spearmint, vanilla, and wintergreen. They are extracted using non-alcoholic solvents such as water, glycerin, and vinegar. Hydrosols, also known as hydrolats, distillate waters or floral waters, hydrosols contain the water-soluble compounds from distilled plants and contain a minuscule amount of essential oils. They are very safe to consume and work wonderfully as spritzers and as fragrances for body care products. After you purchase hydrosols, be careful to refrigerate and use them speedily. They have a tendency to develop bacterial overgrowth and go rancid. Common examples on the market today include lavender, neroli, Roman chamomile, and rose. Infused oils. The byproduct of submerging aromatic plant matter in a fixed oil for days or weeks, infused oil is reminiscent of what our ancestors would have used as perfume, anointing oils, or healing ointments. Tinctures. Using alcohol as the principal solvent to extract essential oils out of plants, tinctures are concentrated herbal remedies that have a long history of medicinal use. They are very easy to make, requiring only unflavored 80 to 90-proof vodka, some herbal biomass, a mason jar, and about 2 months to steep. Examples include arnica, St. John's wort, garlic, and echinacea. Plant parts that produce essential oils. The other factor that contributes to the properties of an essential oil is the part of the plant that it was extracted from. I've fielded numerous questions from people about the origin of their essential oils. The following chart provides a quick overview of the plant parts that make up your favorite oils. Plant parts that produce essential oils. Part: balsam, gum, and resin. Plant: elemi, frankincense, galbanum, myrrh, Peru balsam. Bark: cassia, cinnamon. Berries and fruit: allspice, black pepper, juniper berry, Lytzia cubeba. Flowers and leaves: basil, catnip, clary sage, hyssop, lavender, lavandin, marjoram, melissa, lemon balm, oregano, peppermint, rosemary, sage, spearmint, thyme. Flowers, petals, and buds: chamomile, clove, helichrysum, jasmine, neroli, rose, ylang-ylang. Leaves: bay, kajaput, cinnamon, eucalyptus, geranium, myrtle, niuli, patchouli, pettigrain, tea tree. Needles: cypress, fir, scotch pine, spruce. Peel, rind, bergamot, lemon, lime, mandarin, sweet wild orange, tangerine, yuzu. Roots: angelica, ginger, spikenard, vetiver. Seeds: anise, cardamom, carrot, coriander, cumin, dill, fennel, nutmeg, parsley. Wood: cedarwood, palo santo, rosewood, sandalwood. This information is not just for Trivial Pursuit buffs. It is important to consider the practical applications, since essential oils derived from different parts of a plant can have very different uses and cautions. So, before you start using a particular oil to treat a specific condition, be sure you're using the right one for the purpose. For example, cinnamon essential oil most commonly comes from the Cinnamomum zeylanicum tree. From there, either the inner bark or the leaves can be harvested for distillation. This should be indicated as either cinnamon bark or cinnamon leaf on the bottle. The bark and leaf oils each have their own chemical composition, which means they have very different medicinal properties. Cinnamon leaf essential oil, for example, is steam distilled from cinnamon leaves, is yellowish in color, and contains high amounts of eugenol, 68.6% to 87%, and some cinnamaldehyde, 0.6% to 1.1%. Cinnamon bark essential oil, on the other hand, is steam distilled from cinnamon bark, is reddish-brown in color, and contains mostly cinnamaldehyde, 63.1%